Don't have enough time to read all the best articles on Bitcoin and the crypto economy? Well, let me read them for you. This is a Crypto Economy Quick Read. I want to do a piece that's a little bit different today. First, it's going to be a little bit more fun for me in the editing room, which is generally kind of boring. But at the same time, it's also a topic that I think, and maybe this sounds trite, but Bitcoin has really made more apparent to me, and one that's far more personal than most topics we cover on this show. But there is a critical importance to the nature of time, and there is a disastrous mistreatment of it from our political, financial, and social institutions. We're reading a piece today from EpsilonTheory.com, an amazing blog, and this one is written by Ben Hunt. And it is titled, The Long Now, Part 1, Tick Tock. Last year, I wrote a series of notes called Things Fall Apart, focused on the transformation of our most important social institutions. Small L liberal institutions like free markets and free elections, from cooperation allowing games to competition requiring games. This sounds bloodless and small, but it's not. It is literally how society self-destructs in a widening gyre of mistrust and defection. Today I'm starting a new series of notes called The Long Now, focused on the further transformation of our social institutions into political utilities, into smiley face panopticons of self-censorship, where our marrow of autonomy and free will is sucked dry by the nudging state and the nudging oligarchy. Our money, too. Yes, this will be, quote, actionable, just maybe not in the way you're used to. The long now is everything we pull into the present from our future selves and our children. The long now is the constant stimulus that management applies to our economy and the constant fear that management applies to our politics. The long now is the fiat world of reality by declaration, where we are told that inflation does not exist, where we are told that wealth inequality and meager productivity and negative savings rates just happen, where we are told we must vote for ridiculous candidates to be a good Republican or a good Democrat, where we are told that we must buy ridiculous securities to be a good investor, where we are told we must borrow ridiculous sums to be a good parent or a good spouse or a good child. It's all happened before. Here's an SJW journalist who saw it clearly in the 1930s and 1940s. Quote, history has stopped. Nothing exists except an endless present in which the party is always right. End quote. George Orwell, 1984. What Orwell called the party, I call the nudging state and the nudging oligarchy. I call it management with a capital M. Why? Because the future is not, as Orwell had it, a boot stomping on the face of humanity forever. Please, so messy, so inefficient. No, the future is a smiley face authoritarianism, an authoritarianism that is not imposed on us, but an authoritarianism that we embrace. It's not, yay, big brother. It's yay capitalism, yay military, yay diversity, yay college, and yay stock market. You're not, against any of those things, are you? Because that would be unfortunate. I mean, you're helping the terrorists and all. Things Fall Apart started with the political and ended with the personal. Let's flip that on its head with the long now. Let's flip it all on its head. Because I know a few things about time. Tyler Durden, meet Neb Tina. Quote, "When did the future switch from being a promise to being a threat?" End quote. Chuck Palahniuk, Invisible Monsters. I remember exactly when my future switched from being a promise to being a threat. It was when my father died suddenly of heart failure in the summer of 1996. He was 62 and I was 32. There's something about the dynamic of your father dying suddenly that changes your relationship with the future and with time. Or at least it did for me. Now I was on a trapeze without a net. Now it was all on me, with a baby on the way. Now, to use Palahniuk's words, the future seemed like a threat, not a promise, where my death was next in line. For the first time in my life, I felt the pressure of time and mortality, not as some philosophical musing, but for what it is, an omnipresent pang, a constant bzz, bzz, bzz of that feeling where you wake up with a start and you're sure that the alarm clock is about to ring, but it's only 3 a.m. So you go back to sleep, but you wake up again with a start and it's 3:45 a.m. Quote, "Death inspires me like a dog inspires a rabbit." End quote. 21 Pilots, Heavy Dirty Soul. So right. See, the threat of the future isn't a bad thing. The threat of the future inspires me. The threat of the future drives me. I'm not moping around waiting to die. I'm not lazing around eating bonbons. The present is for doing. The present is fleeting. I've got something to say before I go. I've got a future to secure for my children, because in them, I can still see future's promise and not just future's threat.
This is your life, and it's ending 1 minute at a time.
Warning. If you're reading this, this warning is for you. Every word you read of this useless fine print is another second off your life. Don't you have other things to do? Is your life so empty that you honestly can't think of a better way to spend these moments? Or are you so impressed with authority that you give respect and credence to all that claim it? Do you read everything you're supposed to read? Do you think everything you're supposed to think? Buy what you're told to want? Get out of your apartment. Meet a member of the opposite sex. Stop the excessive shopping and masturbation. Quit your job. Start a fight. Prove you're alive. If you don't claim your humanity, you will become a statistic. You have been warned. Chuck Palahniuk, Fight Club. The threat of the future revealed itself to me in 1996 with the death of my father and the birth of my child. One day, the threat of the future will reveal itself to you, if it hasn't already. When it does, you will be consumed by thoughts of the future. You will feel the pressure of time more keenly than the younger you could ever imagine. Quote, "Time is the fire in which we burn." End quote. Delmore Schwartz, "Calmly We Walk Through This April's Day," 1938. You've never heard of Delmore Schwartz. In 1938, he set the New York literary scene on fire at the ripe old age of 25 with the publication of In Dreams Begin Responsibilities, a brilliant collection of short stories and poems about his parents' marriage and divorce, and Delmore's estrangement from them. From their, quote, death, so to speak. His work is imbued with the failure of the American dream for his generation, with the way in which the team elite of prior generations sucked the economic marrow out of the Gilded Age and dominated politics with false narratives. Sound familiar? Delmore Schwartz wrestled with the threat of the future alone and unloved. He succumbed to alcoholism and madness. He died in 1966 at the Chelsea Hotel, penniless, childless, friendless, dead for 2 days before a cleaning lady found his body. He was 52. Time is the fire in which we burn, or rot. The threat of the future washed over Delmore Schwartz in 1938 as surely as it washed over me in 1996, as surely as one day it will wash over you. But he never found his pack. If you would wrestle with future's threat, if you would stare back at the abyss as Nietzsche would have it, or if you would yell at the clouds as the Simpsons would have it, find your pack. But see, that's only one of the things I know about time. As Paul Harvey used to say, here's the rest of the story. It was the summer of 1996, early June, and I was teaching a course at Simmons College in Boston to make some extra dough. Jennifer was clerking for a law firm down in Dallas, pregnant with our first child. My dad called. He and my mom were in London, where they had rented a small flat for a month. Did I want to come over and stay for a few days? As it happened, I had 5 days free, perfect for a long weekend trip. I walked down to a cheapo travel agency on Boylston, yes, a physical travel agency, and found a ticket for $600 or thereabouts. Seemed like a lot. I could have afforded it, by which I mean there was room on my credit card to buy it, not that I could really afford it. $600 was a lot of money to me. That said, I hadn't seen my parents since Christmas, and my dad sounded so happy. That was a special trip for them, a chance to live in a city that my father loved, and this was my chance to share it with them. But $600? I don't know. I called my father and told him that I just couldn't swing it. He understood. He was a very practical guy. The call lasted all of 20 seconds. You know, international long distance being so expensive and all. I never saw my father again. He died a few weeks after he and my mother got home. Yeah, I know a few things about time. I know that the moving finger writes, and having writ, moves on. I know that I would give anything to go back to that week in June 1996 and buy that stupid ticket that I couldn't afford, but really I could afford, and spend 5 more days with my father and not do anything special, but just be with him and share a beer at that pub that he mentioned on the phone, but that I can't remember the name no matter how hard I try, and it's weird, but that's what bugs me most of all. What do I know about time? I know that there is no long now. The now is short. That is exactly what makes it precious beyond price. The now is for living. I know that there is no safe future. The future is risky. That is exactly what makes it precious beyond price. The future is for investing. Yet instead of living in the now and investing for the future, we are nudged into investing for the now and living in the future. How does this happen? Economic stimulus. The threat of the economic future is removed by fiat and narrative, replaced by the long now of constant economic stimulus. Political fear. The promise of the political future is removed by fiat and narrative, replaced by the long now of constant political fear. We are told that the economic stimulus and the political fear of the long now are costless, when in fact they cost us everything. The nudging state and nudging oligarchy will tell you, Tina! They will tell you that there is no alternative. I tell you this is a lie. I tell you this is sheep logic. The intentional training of human intelligences to pursue myopic, other-regarding behaviors even unto death through the vehicle of the long now. What is the alternative to the long now? Personal courage. Leaders who act as stewards of the future, not managers of the now. Professional courage. Investors who take more risk with what's real and less with what's not. Social courage. Citizens who take back their vote and who refuse to play the fool. Tick, talk. I just thought this piece was really awesome. And before we start talking a lot about the nature of time and what it means for Bitcoin and time preference and stuff, so a lot of the other things that we'll get into, Breedlove's piece, Money, Bitcoin, and Time, as we get into the last section, and then a couple of other pieces. Just time is a critical factor in all of this. And so I wanted to hit a more personal note on what does it mean to us as humans. We all have an extremely limited amount of time. It is truly scarce. And not often do we weigh what that actually means when we say that. You know, I can casually say, oh, time is scarce. But what does that mean? What does that mean for what I'm doing right now? This piece, again, was written by Ben Hunt, and it was on the blog EpsilonTheory.com. So many great and thought-provoking pieces up there if you have not checked that out. I have links to everything in the show notes. And also a thank you to Ben Hunt for allowing me to read his work on the show. I've been following Epsilon Theory a lot, and there's always just really fun writing. And I was really eager to get into this piece. So we're going to talk a little bit more about it. Let's take a break real quick and hit our sponsor, and we'll come back in to get some commentary on this piece. The reason I wanted to cover this piece, among multiple, was just to give a little perspective. I always feel like taking a step back and looking at what matters and what is meaningful is always an important thing to stop and doing, particularly when you're lost in something, when you're consumed with something. It's a great thing to be consumed in something, but it's also very easy to get tunnel vision and get lost in that thing while the rest of the world goes on without you. And this was a great piece for me. This whole series, I think I've read two parts. I believe there's a third one out now. I'm not even sure. But I love this concept of the long now and essentially what's happening. It's such a great description of the constant pulling. We're stealing our future and basically burying ourselves in a constant economic stimulus, and we are stealing our political future and burying ourselves in a constant state of fear. And it's we're being encompassed, we're being completely drowned in all of these things, in this irresponsibility, this forced financial irresponsibility, and what is essentially an entire mistreatment and misunderstanding of the value of time. We're letting it get so deeply skewed that we're losing focus on everything real that's happening. Politically, we're in constant fear. I mean, the world is going to end in 12 years, basically. That's what I hear constantly. And yet everything, if you look at actual data, violence is down. Deaths from disease is down. Standards of living are up all across the world. In fact, we're going through a period where the poorest nations and the poorest people of the world are rising out of poverty so quickly that the world is having a hell of a time trying to adjust for it because there is so much wealth being created. The standard of living, the life expectancy, the overall health, the overall income of people all around the world is on a tear. It is skyrocketing faster than it ever has in history. But if you listen to the political sphere, you would never know that. You would never know that we're getting cleaner per person across the world. You would never know that the modern nations actually produce vastly less pollution and environmental destruction, that we're getting cleaner and cleaner. I mean, there was the Hudson River. There's a famous fire that happened on the river, like on the Hudson River, I believe it was. It was because the surface was so dirty and covered in oils that there would be regular fires on this river. And then we started to clean up our processes in the manufacturing and stuff. Things like progressed and technology got better, and the fires became fewer and fewer, and much larger spans of time between. And then, as the problem was essentially solved, There was one fire that went prolonged for a couple of days, and it made national news. Whereas fires had been common for years, it was just a normal process of the river would catch on fire every once in a while because it was just so disgusting. And then there was this one huge, the fire itself was not very big in comparison to the previous ones, but it became famous because it had been so long that people had gotten used to a time where the fires just didn't happen. So it became this national news, and it became this entire huge stink, and it became famous for that fire. When there was nothing really special about it. In fact, what was special was that people were now not used to fires being on the river. And everything was continually getting vastly better. The amount of pollution and oil and industrial revolution waste, this was all during the Industrial Revolution time, if that wasn't obvious, but the amount of disgusting refuse that made it into the river that caused this problem was getting cleaned up. Everything was getting better, but essentially the culture and the public opinion around it was worse than it had ever been. Because when it's common and frequent, nobody pays attention to it. Nobody cares. It's only when a problem is on the verge of being solved that everybody suddenly freaks out about it. It's like poverty. Like 200 years ago, nobody had candlelight vigils about poverty. Poverty was not a political issue. Poverty was the normal state of the world. If somebody was bitching, you just got punched in the face. Like, that was just the natural state of everything. But now that we see that we could live incredibly wealthy, now that liberty has made this immense amount of productivity and made our lives so much better, we look at poverty and we're like, look how horrible the world is. Look how disgusting and terrible everything is. When it's just that we are coming out of it. It's just that we're solving poverty. It's just that now that we have freedom, we can exchange, we can have this incredibly productive economy, and we can start to think about things. We can look at the world in a different way. We're not so 100% focused on just trying to find the next meal and not die. The reason poverty is such a big deal is because we're solving it, is because free markets have made us realize that poverty doesn't have to be. There's a great book called The Rational Optimist. It's on the Bitcoin Survivors book list. I'll try to remember to link to that in the show notes as well. That's actually where this story is from. And I love, that's an amazing book. And it's really just talking about these major trends and how we've been calling for the death of everything and the end of the world from 10 to 20 years from now. Since forever. It's just been a never-ending story. But if you take a step back, if you look at the full picture, that the reality is that really everything is getting better despite the fact that we've completely lost any gratitude or sense of reality as to what the truth is, like what's getting better. And that's in spite of our horrific financial situation that is making us, it is costing us our future, and getting us to reallocate our values from the future to today, that's getting us to waste on frivolities and confiscating our investments for a better future with more resources and more sound money. And because our idea and value of time is being so skewed, it is changing our perspective. It changes our culture. It has such far-reaching effects in getting us trapped in such a narrow mindset that just takes us from cradle to grave. It's so easy to lose sight of meaning and what's important. And so I like to refresh that every once in a while. I like to refresh it for myself, particularly looking at the Fight Club happens to be one of my favorite movies for a decade. I called it my favorite movie. Hands down. Now I'm a little less, I don't know if I can call anything my favorite movie, but I've always loved that quote, "This is your life and it's ending 1 minute at a time." And there's actually a wonderful blog post on the Wait But Why blog. I'll actually link to it. But he's got a really awesome, he's got like a grid, like this huge box, like boxing out in a grid every week of the average of a 90-year life, I think it is. And then like the and then color coded like the times in your life in which you are most likely to be productive or successful and all of this stuff. And it lays it out in this grid, and you see it's like, wow, that's not a lot of weeks. You don't really stop. You never see the whole picture. In fact, after I read this blog post, I saved a copy of it as my background and colored it in to where I was specifically in that, like, that key point where I need to get shit done. I'm not going to lie, it made a big difference in whether or not I was going to start a podcast. Like, I realized I used to spend an enormous amount of time playing League of Legends. I don't have like a super addictive personality, but I will get stuck into a game every once in a while that I just love. And I technically still love that game, even though it's uninstalled. But I remember I would just spend so much time on it, just getting, like, they have this little thing like where if you play every day, you get like extra, I can't even remember what it is, like experience points or IP or something like that. And you would get in-game goodies for it. You could spend it on stuff. And so you would get a bonus if you got the first win of the day. So I would make it, it was my habit, like my thing to really make sure I got done before I was productive or did anything meaningful when I got home from work was to get my first win of the day. And when it finally, when my perspective shifted and I was slowly starting to ask myself that question, like, what am I doing here? Like, what's meaningful in the, like what am I accomplishing? Am I going to be a professional League of Legends player? Like, I was getting to the point where video games started to seem just more and more pointless. And like, I was having fun, but I would constantly be asked, I was starting to feel that pressure of time. And I was just going, why am I doing this again? Like, what am I accomplishing? What am I getting out of this? And I was reading a lot of books. I've been reading a lot of books for years and years now. And I wish I could remember what book it was specifically. It's probably multiple books. But there was one concept that really stuck with me through a lot of the books that I was reading. And it was that what you do now, what you do every day, what you spend your time doing, extrapolate that out, extend that out, that you've made the same decisions you've made for the last 2 weeks, whether it's to play League of Legends or to watch movies or to eat healthy versus eat crappy, to work out versus be lazy. Like, extend that out. Take the last couple of weeks of decisions and extend that you've made, you make those same decisions over and over and over again for the next 2 years. In fact, just lay out the previous 2 years onto the next 2 years. Where does that leave you? What's the result of that? To change, like, what you're doing, to change your perspective, you have to be making the same decisions all the time. Make that little decision to work out, which is one thing I'm terrible at, and I'm trying to get a little bit better at it, but that one's difficult for me. But this was what led me to this podcast. Like, there were so many different ideas being bounced around in my head, and there was one day I came home from work. And I've been, you know, mulling over the idea of starting something, of being productive, of actually putting myself into a position where I am actually making the future, where I am actually pushing toward the future that I actually want, as opposed to just dreaming about it and playing League of Legends. And I came home one day and I was like, all right, I'm going to work on something. I can't remember what I was. I think I was doing a video or something on YouTube. And I was like, let me get my first win of the day real quick. Let me play my League of Legends game. I jumped in and played a game and came really, really close to winning. And then everything went to crap right at the end of the game. And I was like, getting frustrated. And that proceeded to happen again and again and again. And I think I played like 8 games in a row, maybe 9. It was a very long losing streak. And finally, sometime at, it was like midnight, it was like 12:30 at night, And I had done nothing else. I had gotten nothing accomplished. And I was actually really motivated when I came home. I was ready to get something done. And I realized that I was angry. I was incredibly angry because I had spent the whole night and I just lost and lost and lost. And I was pissed. And all those questions came flooding back to me. What the hell are you doing? What did you get done today? If you extend this out over the next 3 years, where do you end up? Do you care about getting the first win of the day for the next 3 years? Is that really your priority? And in my frustration, I was just like, it has to end right now. And I basically uninstalled the game that night, and that was it. But it started to get me to think about time differently. And these things have slowly built on top of each other. And I'm very lucky to have not had to face what Ben Hunt had to face with his father dying. I'm very lucky that I have not yet really had to deal with that, particularly in like a sudden and completely out of the blue fashion. But I've been terrible about actually talking to my mother and father. In fact, I probably haven't talked to them in like a week. And it makes it way worse because I've really grown apart from them. I don't really know when it happened, but I realize like particularly my dad is really, I mean, arguably, I kind of feel like he's all consumed and laser focused and tunnel visioned on the long now of the whole political game. Like he's more wrapped up in it than ever before. So I'm finding it harder and harder to relate to him, but I want to talk to him. I want to hang out with him and stuff like the good old days, you know? But the more time I let go by and the more I don't do that and like connect, the further they get from me. And like, I know one day, I mean, the clock is ticking. So I'm probably going to call him after I get done with this recording. Maybe it sounds trite, but I feel like all of this, the digging into and really diving into the concepts of time preference and the value of time as something as seemingly distant from the personal implications of it, of interest rates, like what it means to value time. And I thought this piece that there is no long now, that the now is short. So the now is for living, but there's also no safe future. There is risk everywhere. And that's why we need to be building towards a future that we want. If there is something that you want, you need to be making, like the decisions I do every day has to be toward adding to that future that I'm looking for, because we have a future already that could be bad. Like if I'm just sitting, accomplishing nothing, if I'm not spreading the ideas that I think will lead us to that future, if I'm not helping to build that, then by default, I am letting someone else run it. I'm letting the managers decide what my future is. And when I found Bitcoin, it seemed like such a relief. Like I could let go of this idea of the long now, that it's, that had to be my focus, that politics had to be the center of my world. I had to give a shit who the president was. And Bitcoin made me realize that there is a whole alternative, that you can just step away. You can step away and build toward the future that you want. And I don't have to be attached to any of that crap. I can invest to the future that I want to happen. And I can share that. I can try to bring that to other people. And the nudging state, the nudging oligarchy, as Hunt calls it, will tell you there's no alternative, that this is the whole way of everything, and you are either red or you are blue or you are nothing. And I'm just like, I'm just finally, it's just, now it's just a game. Now it's just like this, it's like sports ball to me. I'm not a sports ball fan. If anybody knows me, I don't watch sports. I kind of have that same, you know, no offense to anybody who loves sports, but I kind of have that same feeling watching a game or following sports, really. I mean, I'll watch a game every once in a while just to hang out with friends, following a sport seemed very much like, or makes me ask the same questions that I did with League of Legends, is why Why am I doing this? But when I get to step away from the long now, when I get outside of that box, there are so many possibilities. Like, all I see is potential now. All I see is how much better things are getting and the incredible scale and power of the transition that we are currently going through. Yes, it's messy. Yes, there's tons of shit happening. And I think the long now is a bit of like that persona, that culture is a lot of the response of the fact that things are changing too fast. So people, like our collective identity is desperate to grab onto the remaining threads of what held essentially our old idea of the world together. And we need to be cognizant of what our time is. Like, what we need to weigh the value of our time and what we do against its incredibly limited nature. It's incredible scarcity. Remember, time is just as scarce as Bitcoin, and we should treat it as preciously as we treat our sats. We should hold on to and value our time as deeply and as critically important as we hold our Bitcoin. And are we doing that? Do you hold on to the time that moves through your day? Do you hold on to your seconds like you hold on to Bitcoin? Like, those seconds are counting down. You know, TikTok. I got a lot of things I want to do. I want to have a hugely successful podcast. I want to spread the ideas that I think are going to shape us and send us into an amazing future that is totally possible. And we already have the vast majority of those tools. I want to help build that. I want to be a part of something. I want to own something of incredible value that other people are inspired by, that they find that they're like, holy crap, look at this incredible value, that they actually, it's worth it to them to trade. I want to have a family. You know, there's a very strict time limit on those things. And I don't want to lose it letting those seconds tick by without purposefully directing every one of those seconds to those future things that I want. I can always look back and think, oh, I should have started a podcast for the 4 years that I wanted to start a podcast and beat myself up about it. But all we've got is now. All I've really got is right now. And I know I have not been valuing my time as scarcely and as important as valuing my Bitcoin. And I don't think many people do. I think people pass off and forget and lose the perspective, because I know I did and I still do. I do it every day, and I'm trying to get myself in the perspective it's that I need to realize this. And I love when I get a piece like this that really puts it in perspective and gets the gears churning so that I can think about this and try to learn from a lesson that he learned. Like, because that's one of those powerful things about humanity is we can learn from each other. We don't all have to make the same hard mistakes or suffer the same lessons to learn it all. And I just love how he closes out this piece is, what's the alternative to the long now? Use personal courage. Leaders who act as stewards of the future, not managers of the now. Professional courage, investors who take more risk with what is real and less with what is not. And social courage, citizens who take back their vote and who refuse to play the fool. And I'll tell you, Bitcoin is my vote, because Bitcoin will lead me into the future. It has put me in a place where I'm beginning to see the value of time and think differently about it. And that's not something that's easy to find. And it's also the tool that will lead me into the future that I hope to bring, that I hope my life, whatever time that I am here for, is spent building. Like, I want to leave this place knowing that we're closer to the future that I wanted because of me. One of my favorite lines in this piece is that the present is for doing. The present is fleeting. I've got something to say before I go. I've got a future to secure for my children because in them, I can still see future's promise and not just future's threat. And damn it, that's the truth. I gotta do something here, you know? I want the world to change for the better because I was here. And I think it's kind of funny that the scarcity of magic internet money made me consider why I haven't valued or have dismissed the importance of something that is equally scarce. Time. So thank you to Ben Hunt for this piece. Don't forget that you can check all this out on EpsilonTheory.com. So much fun stuff up there. Just a ocean of great writing and just thought-provoking concepts to dig through. I love this kind of shit. So thank you guys for joining me. We will close this episode out here. I hope you value your time as much as you value Bitcoin. And remember that it's always a trade-off between the two. And don't let yourself get caught up in the false thinking of the fiat world, of the long now, that we should be all consumed with our politics, that we should be all consumed with the values that are put on us. There is an alternative, and I hope you help make a decision every single day. I hope you help me in taking us there, and I hope I can make better decisions to get us there faster. All right. Thanks for listening, guys. This is The Crypto Economy, and I am Guy Swan. Don't forget to check out all the awesome links I will have in the show notes today. If you would like to support this show, if you enjoy my rants and the stuff that I am reading from all the most amazing authors in this space, become a patron at patreon.com/thecryptoeconomy. And don't forget, you get to join us in the Telegram group for the Crypto Economy crew. We got a really fun group over there. And I'd love to have you guys join us. But in the meantime, if you can't swing that, the other thing you can do is just share this show out with everybody you know who's interested in going a little bit down the rabbit hole, who's standing on the edge and wants to learn about Bitcoin, wants to dive into this philosophy, wondering where this is born from and what is the alternative. Because there is an alternative to the long now. And I think that's what Bitcoin embraces. I think that's what the crypto economy embraces, is that there is an alternative if we just step away and take a look around. So share it out with everybody you know in the Bitcoin and crypto economy space. Until next time, take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.